this.
Hey, have you seen his Instagram?
They need
this Felger and Mass.
They don't use crank enough.
On 98.5.
Yeah, not really.
The Sports Hub.
So I don't know how reliable any of the sources or rumors are. Terry hasn't shared any of those with me, and I think he would if he were feeling that way. Terry knew going in this year what his situation, what his role was going to be, and he was as excited and enthusiastic as anybody on our team for the upcoming season. I mean, I know for sure that Terry would love to be playing more minutes, but there's a lot of guys on the team that would be loving to play more minutes. But I feel like I have a relationship with Terry that he would come to me and talk to me and or Brad, and, you know, if he was really frustrated about a situation, and none of that's happened.
This morning on Touch and Rich, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Catch the full replay of this interview on our app, 98.5 The Sports Hub app. All the live streams on that as well, and replays. You can miss any, if you miss anything, just catch up that night or the next morning on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Danny Ainge weekly with Touch and Rich, denying any reports yesterday that Terry Rozier is unhappy with his role, expressed unhappiness with his role, that he's fielding trade offers, or that he's hard to trade him, or trying to trade him, or that any teams have even inquired on him. Let me give you one follow-up comment, and then I want your thoughts, okay? Mm-hmm. So here's another comment. Jimmy, just play the second one with the follow-up question as well. With Danny Ainge this morning with Toucher and Rich on this topic.
We've had a few different discussions on all this issue leading up with each one of the players, as a matter of fact. But, you know, Terry, we all knew what Terry was coming into. His agent, Terry, us, we've discussed it. We preempted all of this type of thing from happening before the season. But so I don't know where any of this stuff is coming from. And I don't know anything about the seven teams that are monitoring it and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that just seems sort of stuff that's been made up, or I don't believe any of it, put it that way.
So no teams have called you about Terry Rozier?
Not since the season started, no.
Okay. That last part I love. The season started like 10 minutes ago.
Right.
It just started. So you haven't gotten a call in the last couple weeks. All right. How about 3 weeks ago? I'm not saying the follow-up right there, but I think I think he's telling you he was getting calls on him up until the season started.
No question.
He gave himself an out with that answer.
I mean, the season just started.
Yep.
So, anyway, your thoughts.
No, which means that we know that they had talked to Rozier about a contract before the season. We know he didn't sign, and my guess is that there were discussions about trading him at that time, and they said to him, we're not going to trade you, we need you, because if Kyrie gets hurt or misses time, we need you. And I don't think they're going to move him. I'd be surprised if they did. I think they have too much invested in this season to just walk away from Terry Rozier now. And I say walk away. Unless there's some great need in another area later in the year and they feel that Kyrie's healthy. You follow me? Like,
yeah.
If they get to the point where they say, no, Kyrie's good and we've had an injury and now we need a center. Or we need, another small forward or whatever. A specific need to fill, then fine, maybe they do it at that time, but I still doubt it. I think they're going to keep Rozier to back up Thomas, Freudian slip.
Kyrie Irving,
because they're worried about him, you know, just in case.
I just don't know what the return could be, because it doesn't feel like Ainge has that much of an advantage with a guy that's going to be a free agent and that they need as insurance in case Kyrie hurts his knee again. So if you're a team, you kind of have Ainge over the barrel, like, okay, like, you don't really get to call the shots here, because this is a guy on an expiring contract, and you kind of need him.
Do you believe that Rozier hasn't been complaining and it hasn't gotten back to Ainge, and that's a complete non-story, doesn't know where it's coming from, complete fabrication, doesn't believe any of it?
No.
That's a crook.
No, and with all due respect to Danny Ainge, what's he going to do? Come out publicly and say, yeah, Terry's been unhappy? Like, and tell the world that they got a disgruntled guy in their roster? And the other thing is, he said Terry hasn't talked to him. Does that mean the agent hasn't called? I don't know. I mean, maybe the complaints are coming through the agent. And again, I'm just being cryptic about it like they are, because I think that this is how it works. And the reality is, they're never going to come out and tell you that a guy's unhappy if they're trying to move him, because it undermines them. So why would they do that? So there's no way he can be happy.
Should they be trying to trade Terry Rozier?
No.
Because you're still worried about Kyrie's knee.
I am. I want the backup plan.
So you're still waiting for a final verdict on that trade, are you?
I am.
No, I'm
no, I know you're trying to pay me. Don't you worry about that. I also think you're going to run into stretches during the year. We have a ton of games in a short period of time. And I think that the battle for best record in the East is going to be more difficult than they thought it was.
So let me tell you something. And I just want to make sure I believe this before I say it. If Kyrie's gone, you're not winning anything anyway. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not winning anything anyway. Even if Kyrie's fine, you're still a big underdog to the Golden State Warriors. So it's probably not your year for a championship.
Sure.
You know, it's your year to go to the finals, but it's still probably not quite yet your time. And if Kyrie gets hurt, it's really not your time, whether it's Rozier or Marcus Smart or whoever. So I would get out from under Terry Rozier while the getting's good. I would do it now. I would.
Okay.
Because he and this thing that's sort of going on with the team has the potential to sort of derail their season a little bit. You know, the selfishness and the, you know, the egos and that sort of thing. If guys aren't playing the right way, that is a chance to cost you games, cost you home court, cost you in the playoffs.
Do you think that that they think that way? No. In other words, you said you would get out from under Rozier. I think they feel they might have the best team in the league.
Well, they're a little ahead of themselves.
So, look, now, I agree with you. I think they're probably the best team in the East, although they haven't played like it yet.
No, but if not that, I think they like having insurance in case Kyrie's knee flares up again and he's going to be out for any extended period of time.
Sure.
So they shouldn't move on from him.
Yeah, they should. Because if Kyrie's done, they're done. So what's the point? I mean...
He should be better anyway. He should. He's one of the guys that surprised me how bad he's been offensively. Like,
but again, it goes back to this guy wants to be a star. He wants to max out. He wants to be.
Well, gee, I wonder why that is.
Because the Green Teamers pumped him up. I'm surprised you weren't chanting MVP at Terry Rozier last year.
Yeah, scary Terry.
Like you did with the last little guy. It's just like the
dumb
IT
nickname,
thing.
The T-shirts, IT 2.0. It's exactly what it is.
And the fans are to blame. The fans are the one who pumped all, you know, because of the way the Green Teamers act. It's like everyone's the next big thing, and everyone's an MVP, and everyone's great. And so you pump up this guy's tires, and now he's got an inflated sense of self-worth. Well, where do you think he got that from? From you! From you people! But this is a thing that the team's got to work out. Like, here's another Ainge cut. Jimmy, give me the fourth one on Tatum.
Just quickly, I'm more worried about Jaylen Brown, but go ahead.
Okay. I put him in the same category. He still thinks you beat the Cavaliers last year. Now he's got him winning 5 or 6 rings, whether he's trying to impress the sideline gal or whatever. He's talking out his ass. He ain't playing well. He's the one that thinks he's the next big thing himself.
Oh, yeah, no. He's already putting championship rings on his toes.
Good God.
Because he ran out of fingers.
So this whole thing has happened with the team. It has. And, you know, you and others have wondered, has it crept into the game of Jason Tatum?
Yep.
You know, is he got a little superstaritis or a little selfishness or something going on there with Tatum's game? Fred asked Danny Ainge about that.
Jason has had some fantastic games early in the year, and he's had some games where he has struggled. And Jason is not selfish. Jason is a scorer. You know, sometimes he might try to do too much, but that's just the nature of the game. And he's playing to his strengths. But listen, I'm not worried about any of these types of things right now. I think that we are a team that's trying to find ourselves. I think Brad's trying to figure out the best combinations and who to play and the best combinations together to maximize our depth. It's a work in progress, but not down on any one individual. There's some guys that have played better than others more consistently, but everybody's had their ups and downs so far this year.
Okay, so the patience remains, and they should be. It's only 10 games. And I think we all believe they're going to figure it out. Again, my only point is if it takes too long and you lose home court, that could come back to haunt you. And I just wonder if it gets to a point where Ainge loses some patience or says, well, you know what, it's time to actually say something or do something or give the team a...
There has to be a time limit on this.
A little bit of a message,
right? If it continues to look like this for like another month and a half, you're going to have to shake something up here.
So there's something that annoyed you about the Celtics recently, Murray?
Yeah, that Brad Stevens invited his Indiana pal Peyton Manning to come watch film to the team. And that he could speak to them about being a perennial playoff loser so he can bore them with his tales of that. Like, what are we doing here? And so with all this talk now of this people being concerned about this team, myself included, and how it's looked like there could be chemistry issues and maybe, you know, some guys like Rozier bitching about minutes. Okay, some guys got to check themselves and become a little bit more self-aware about their role. Why don't I hear Brad Stevens' name in any of this? Why does Brad Stevens got to get a pass here? Because this is part of the gig. If guys are bitching about minutes and their roles... This is part of the job. You have to set them straight. And I haven't really heard anyone getting on Stevens, and frankly feels like maybe he's not doing that end of it. And based on the history, it doesn't seem like he wants to deal with any problematic players. Remember, the rumor was that they could have been in on Boogie Cousins, right, Jimmy? But the guy that didn't want him was Brad Stevens because, oh, I don't want to deal with the problem. And as we know, Ainge will sign an axe murderer as long as he can help the team win. So I just wonder, like, what's he really doing behind the scenes here? And is all he's doing is bringing in, you know, fathead Peyton Manning to come talk to the guys and watch film? Like, how does this help?
Is this just because you hate Peyton Manning?
Partly. But still, like, of all, you couldn't get a local guy? An actual real winner?
I'll tell you, though.
Can't you talk to your own damn players to set them straight? Bring in this guy?
Murray brings in a good point, though. If you're going to have a quarterback talk to your team, why not Brady?
Get the guy off the street.
Brady.
You have Yeah, we get it.
This is a good point. You got to donate to Save the World.
Right. Oh, that's true. Yeah, hug a tree or something on the way in. Like, but really, bring in Belichick. Bring in Brady. Don't bring in that jackass. Like, that guy, what's that guy to teach you how to poop your pants on the 50-yard line? Like, there's no point in doing that. You know, go get someone who's actually won. Don't teach them about the perennial playoff losing. That's negative reinforcement.
He's just another even-keeled Midwesterner. He's just another guy. You know, he's more relatable. That's why he brought him in. Ugh, I don't know. It just bothered me. And so what's Stevens doing to kind of set these guys straight? It just feels like, oh, no, the players will have to figure it out. Or maybe we'll have to make a trade. I don't know. How about some yelling, Brad?
I'm telling you, I go back to that thing in the preseason when Stevens get agitated at them for not playing defense, and Jalen Brown said, "Eh, it's a preseason." And I like, look,
guy who's done nothing yet,
so,
nothing.
And if I'm Stevens, I, you know, publicly I probably ignore it, and even on the day-to-day operation with the team, I ignore it. But if I'm in the car driving home, I'm saying to myself, "He just spit in my face." I sat there and said, "No, we're not playing right," and he just sits there in front of his locker and says, "Eh, you know." They ask him about what the coach said. "Eh, yeah, it's pretty sick." So, you know, I'm going to have 5 rings by the time I'm 28 anyway. What's he bitching about? Please, stiff. Like, he's never played in this league like I have. Eh, it's no big deal. Preseason. Like, if I'm Stevens, I'm pissed.
Jim, okay, to your you point, there have been the Comcast microphones have picked up during games. Stevens essentially pass by pass calling out defensive rotations. So he's doing his part.
All right. Good.
Well, but hold on. Calling plays during a game?
That's calling defensive rotations pass by pass.
No, but that's not what we're talking about, Jimmy. We're talking about managing the egos in the locker room. We're not talking about his defensive rotations and calling out plays during a game.
Do a lot of NBA coaches do that? Do they call out offensive or defensive plays?
No, but this is a different topic. We're not talking about that. Fine. Give him credit for that. The issue with the team, it feels like egos and minutes and this thing. That's off the court, in the locker room, managing these personalities. What has he done for that?
Yeah, I want to know when Jalen Brown became Scottie Pippen. That's what I'm like. When did he wake up and say, "No, man, I'm Scottie Pippen"? Let alone, actually more like Jordan, because he's got 5 rings.
All right, guys, you want to mix in the Celtics stuff with all of our football stuff, the baseball conversation? By all means, right to you after this.
Felger and Mez. The Sports Hub. Felger and Mez.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, we've won a couple games I thought that we would not have won had Terry not played and played well, including opening night against Philly. I think that it's normal for players that are coming off the bench to, you know, want to get things done in a hurry because they know that they're might not be in as long. And I sense a little bit of that with Terry. But listen, Terry is not a problem for our team. He's a great kid. He's loved by his teammates. He's playing well. We all know what Terry is capable of doing when he gets an opportunity to start and play more minutes. But, yeah, he may be pressing a little bit, but he's not the only one. I feel like we have a few guys. And as you have looked at our team so far through these 10 games, we have a few guys playing really well each night. We really haven't had a game where we've played a good 40-minute game and 48-minute game and you know, had everybody clicking at the same time. But Terry Rozier is not a concern of mine or Brad's. We have all the confidence in him in any moment, any time in the game. Not really worried about any of it.
Again, more Angels from this morning on Toucher and Rich, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Catch that full Ainge replay on our app, 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Mixing the Celtics stuff with our football commentary, Eli in North Attleboro on the seas. Go ahead, Eli.
What's up, Felger? Real quick comment. The only person I was looking it up with an expiring contract is Terry Rozier. Jalen Brown still got 4 more years. Tatum's got 5. You got to get rid of Terry. He's going to corrupt the young guys. The second thing, with the Patriots trick plays, I really think you guys are overdoing it. They had one trick play. That fake screen pass in the pass to Gordon wasn't a trick play. That was good play calling. If you remember, the first drive of the game, they drove all the way down at about 2 minutes.
No one said it was a good play calling, Eli. Eli, good play calling. Said it a million times, good play calling, not the issue. The issue is what they were doing without those trick plays. Does that concern you? What were they doing without the trick plays, and how do you feel about it? That's the story, okay? From the day, the moment Greg Bedard said it to this moment right now in time, it's not the trick plays, it's how are they playing without them, and does it concern you? Okay? Greg actually sent us something. He's following up. Greg is following up on a couple things. He's going to fire back at the Butler benching and context.com cracks. He's working on something right now at his website to defend himself and his position, which I felt came out of nowhere the other day when he said Bill was right to bench Malcolm Butler. I'm like, what? Who got to you, pal? But he's going to defend himself vehemently. He sent us something on these plays, on these trick plays, Maz. Do you have it? How come I can't?
Yeah, so I just found it myself, actually. Between the end of the first drive and the start of the fourth quarter.
This is Sunday night against Green Bay.
Okay, so basically the middle two quarters of the game. 41 minutes, 35 seconds, as Greg describes it. Brady's statistics in this game were 11 of 23 for 166 yards. That is a completion percentage of 48.8 and a passer rating of 68.0. So Greg's point is that really the majority of the game, two-thirds of the game, more than 41 minutes, the Patriots passing game stunk.
Okay, and without the trickeration, what would it have been for the entirety of the game? That's his point. Because without the trickeration, well, you just saw the numbers.
Right. And that's
what it was. The first and fourth quarter had the hurry-up offense, had the flea flicker pass. The fourth quarter had the double pass and the fake screen, or the pump-and-go screen. So you take out those plays, what were they?
Exactly. Yeah, and he does. He spells that out and says the Patriots, if you take out the Edelman pass to White and the touchdown to Gordon, those two plays, the Patriots average on their other 63 plays 5.4 yards. That's below the league average. So I don't think it's wrong to look at the offense here in the last couple of weeks and say, what has happened? And I don't think it's all related to Gronk because they didn't get in the end zone in the Buffalo game.
Mike and Lynn with the Red Sox thought. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah.
His first point on the Celtics about Tate and Brown having 4 and 5 years left respectively. Not quite. There's restricted status in the middle of it. That's where Terry Rozier is. Terry Rozier isn't an unrestricted free agent. He's a restricted free agent, but he wants the restricted max, which is $27 million. Unbelievable. And so, no. The contract things with Tatum and Brown come up much earlier than their unrestricted year, and this is part of the issue. They're all going for their contracts and their money, and I don't blame them. Like, they still have to carve out who they are in the league.
I mean, it usually comes up, I think, after your third season, you're restricted.
So this is all on the table for all these guys.
After your fourth season, you're restricted.
Whatever. Like, yeah. It's all coming up. So that's the issue we're talking about with the Celtics. Here's Mike and Lynn on the Red Sox. Hi, Mike.
Hey, just going back to what you guys were talking about earlier about Scott Boras and J.D. Martinez to get nominated for MVP. I totally forgot that he can opt out after next season. I mean, if I'm correct, I think he can opt out after years 2, 3, and 4. So yep. I'm sure it's in Boris' head that if he got nominated for MVP, if he's got another stellar year like he did last year, next year, wants to keep it. I mean, do you guys think he's going to opt out, and then you're left without Bogarts and Martinez? Thanks.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know what I'm telling you. Yes, and yes. You nailed it all. Absolutely. They're looking to go right back to market with JD because they feel they got porked last year. And so they're looking for another big year from Martinez, which is good for you, but he's going to opt his ass out. And that's all the more reason why Boras is like, you know, if you could put an MVP finalist or an MVP award next to that free agent year, look out.
Absolutely. Yeah, look, and again, it further complicates the puzzle for the Red Sox, if that's how you want to look at it. So to me, you got a bunch of guys coming up here in a year plus. Call it a 15-month, 16-month window. You got a bunch of them. From your most important players. Price opting in may end up being a blessing if you lose a lot of these guys.
Tim in Worcester on the Butler situation. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
All right. Hey, I understand that I have an idea why Butler didn't play and got benched.
Okay, babe.
He killed himself with 1,000 little pay cuts during the course of the season. And then finally at the end, what we think happened, and Belichick said, you know what, that's enough. You deactivated. Then Kraft.
No, just the opposite. He didn't deactivate him. He put him in uniform and then stood him on the sidelines to embarrass him. If he deactivated him, we wouldn't have a story, in my opinion.
Right.
Because if whatever he did was against team rules and untenable, then send his ass home. I don't have a problem with that. Or I'd have much less of a problem, in other words. Then at least you're consistent. And it wasn't then personal to dress him, tell him before the game, have him stand there in tears on the sidelines, and then have him stew there all game long in front of a national, international TV audience.
And put him in on one token punt.
Was personal.
No, that was a public shaming. It was. That's what he wanted. He wanted a public shaming.
And I agree there it was a culmination of things with maybe one last little thing at Super Bowl week, maybe. But maybe not. Again, I don't pretend to know. I only pretend to tell you that I've heard something that I have no idea if it's true or not. But whether I do think it was a combination of things, but it started with, as it usually does, money. Money. They offered Butler a lot of money. At the end, a very good offer, not this nonsense $7 million a year thing that he was right to turn down. They offered him another contract that he was also right to turn down because he got more in Tennessee, but at least it was competitive. A really competitive offer, and he turned that down. And that's when Bill said, F this kid. And he was done no matter what happened. But then what happened is he sort of sucked during the year, kind of lost his head during the year, had a bad Super Bowl week, maybe had a little bad incident that aggravated Bill further, and next thing you know, not deactivated, active, but scarlet letter.
No, that's right. Again, he wanted him standing there on the sideline in uniform for everyone to see, on the same stage that Malcolm Butler was created on. Like, I don't know how people can ignore that. You know, that whole sort of full circle symmetry. If they were looking to just punish the guy, they could have just buried him somewhere and no one would have known about it. But he wanted him out there. He wanted him standing on the sideline to be shamed. Shame, shame.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub.
You know, the other piece of the Malcolm Butler story we've been talking about is that, you know, Bill Belichick getting it right in terms of the contract, which is largely true, right? Malcolm Butler, well, I mean, they were right to pay Stephon Gilmore instead of Malcolm Butler. They're right about it. You know, no question about it. And if that were the premise of Bedard's comments with us or Chris Gasper's column, everyone would have less of a problem with it. But both those guys and others, I guess, I don't know. You tell me, Jerry Thornton's of the world. All can be read, by the way, in ButlerBenchingInContext.com. ButlerBenchingInContext.com. are sort of now tying Butler struggling in Tennessee to Bill making the right call in the Super Bowl, which is preposterous. Absolutely preposterous.
I mean, there's no direct correlation there. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, there's no defending Bill putting a player in uniform who he wasn't going to use on the football field, thereby knowingly and willingly burning a roster spot in the most important game of the year. I mean, just think of that. Just take out all the names and all the circumstances. You activate a player and put him in uniform who you know you're not going to use on the field. That hurts your football team.
Sure.
Never mind someone who might have been able to help you. And the fact that Bill never even gave it a shot, it's indefensible, and basically everyone knows it. But the other piece that I started with, that they made the right call on the contract, that's starting to go up our tailpipe a little bit too. That there's some extenuating circumstances. I think people have gone a little bit too far with that, you know, in and of itself. I know Maz agrees. Maz, you want to go first?
Well, look, I think it's independent of what the actual value of the offer was. Now, look, if the offer was, you know, $2 million a year, that's one thing, I suppose. But I even go back all the way to the initial offer that was reported, I think, by Jeff Howe at the time, that they had offered Malcolm Butler somewhere in the range of $7 million a year annually and that he turned it down. I look at that and say, well, if you're willing to give him $7 million a year, then you thought he could play. Like, that's not exactly zero. I know it's not, it's not top money for a corner, but it's not bottom money for a corner either.
Here's what Maz is trying to say is what is being ignored in giving Bill Belichick these kudos for being right on the player is that Bill actually wanted Malcolm Butler first. He wanted him and offered him good money. According to Field Yates, 6 years, $66 million with 25 guaranteed. That was offered in 2016. That was the Patriots' last best offer. 6 years, 66, $25 million guaranteed. Butler ended up signing 5 years, 61, with $30 million guaranteed. Better deal in Tennessee, but the Pats were close. That was a real good competitive offer. That was nearly the market. So they wanted the player.
Right. And again,
they wanted the player. So all these guys that we're giving Belichick all this credit for passing on Malcolm Butler, he didn't pass on Malcolm Butler. Butler passed on them.
Right. He would have rather had Malcolm Butler at $11 million a year than Stephon Gilmore at $14.
Well, that's not necessarily true. They, you know, they were a year apart. And when Bill had a chance to make that exact decision the next year, he went Gilmore over Butler. I'm not going to take that credit away. But the year before, in 2016, before Stephon Gilmore was on the radar, was a free agent, or you know they were in that year, he offered Malcolm Butler a really good contract because he wanted the player. He wanted the player. And credit to Tom Kern for pointing this out on NBC Sports Boston.
I mean, Bill got lucky there a little bit.
Which basically says, his column on NBC Sports Boston says that Malcolm Butler saved the Patriots from themselves. Says, when the Patriots see Mike Vrabel struggle to explain why Butler is directly responsible for 7 touchdowns this season, they probably won't be congratulating themselves. Instead, they'll be thinking, there but for the grace of God, go I. Belichick and Caserio won't be smug about not making the same mistake with Butler because the Patriots tried to make the exact same mistake. They tried. So that's one. That's one thing. Okay, so as you're patting Bill on the back for that personnel move, know that he wanted Butler. Secondly, I think people are ignoring what Butler would look like if he were still here.
See, to me, this is one of the great paradoxes of Patriots fans. That's the part I don't get.
So give me that again.
So that if you have a player here and he plays well in your system with your coach, then Belichick's coaching matters. Belichick brings players to a level that they otherwise would not be able to attain. Okay, but when a player leaves and goes somewhere else and he doesn't perform, see, he sucks. You follow me?
Yes, what Maz is saying is that Butler would be better here. Right now he ranks like something like 132nd out of all the cornerbacks in the NFL on Pro Football Focus, 132nd. If he was here, there's no way they would have allowed him to give up 7 touchdowns and be ranked 132nd.
No coach or coaching staff has put players in a better situation to improve how they actually are than this one over the last 20 years.
They'd give him help. They'd change the defense. They'd shade to his side. They'd protect him. They'd accentuate his strengths and hide his weaknesses, just like they did with you-know-who, Stephon Gilmore. If we were talking about this exact same thing at this time last year, we'd be looking at Stephon Gilmore and saying, why'd they spend that money? We were. Everybody was. And then you know what Bill did?
Started playing man-to-man with him.
Helped him out. Started using the schemes that benefited him. Started going to man. In Gilmore's case, that what helps him out. He got him away from those bunch. He started coaching. He started coaching the problem, which is what he would do with Malcolm Butler would not suck as bad if he were still here. And if Stephon Gilmore were back in Buffalo, he'd be an absolute afterthought in the league. He wouldn't be the same guy he is here. The coaching matters, right?
Of course it matters. See, again, and I just find this to be wildly inconsistent, that Patriots fans are so insistent on proving that Belichick, the GM, is right about everything, that they insult Belichick, the coach, or they don't factor him in. It's like I use the Deion Branch one as an example because it's an easy one. Deion Branch worked here with Belichick and Brady. So they let him go to Seattle and he wasn't as good. Does that mean Deion Branch sucked or he just didn't have the same coaching and the same quarterback?
Yeah, it was the wrong system for
him. Right, exactly. And that is an elementary one because it factors in Brady too. But the reality is that Belichick elevates a lot of guys that they bring in here. So then when the guys leave, why is it solely about their talent and not about the coaching too? Like, I feel the same way with Garoppolo, not to go down that road. But I look at it and say, if Malcolm Butler were here, you don't think Bill Belichick could be getting more out of him than they are in Tennessee?
Guarantee you he would.
He does it with everybody. I don't think you've ever heard us in 9-plus years on this show sit here and say, Belichick sucks as a coach. He won't get anything out of that guy. When have we ever said that? We've never even gotten close to saying that.
So I just think people are overstating that. You know, they were still right to go with Gilmore over Butler. Bill nailed that. Absolutely right. It's just Gilmore wouldn't be as good if he wasn't here, and Butler wouldn't be as bad if he were still here. The gap would be smaller. The huge gap right now between Gilmore and Butler is Bill Belichick, the coach. That's what that gap's all about. If it wasn't Bill Belichick, Gilmore's better, but he's not this much better. So that's just a reset on the Butler thing. Your thoughts on that, the Celtics items, the Red Sox items we had before, whatever you want, right after this in our long commercial-free segment.
Yeah. This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
What's really interesting here, Malcolm Butler, hero 3 years ago in the Super Bowl, has not played a defensive snap tonight. The Patriots are telling us a coach's decision. Of course, it was easier to get information out of East Germany before the wall went down than to get injury information from New England. But Butler has not played a defensive snap yet. Eric Rowe has taken his spot. Here's a giant. It's wrapped up 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage. This was during America the Beautiful. Butler was very emotional on the sideline. Can't guess what this was about, but he's played on special teams tonight, but not on defense.
Well, it was a beautiful rendition, so you never know, right? But you have to think that maybe he was hurting a bit, and you just wonder when it was that he got the news, or maybe it was just a reaction to it, and maybe it wasn't any of the above.
Continue the Malcolm Butler story again, not just because they're playing him this week, but Butler benching in context.com continues to rage.
Yeah, and it's been updated too. So, you know, they now list the backgrounds and myths of the benching, and they actually use quotes around it, separating fact from fiction. Like myth number one, Malcolm Butler was not emotional on the sidelines. He had dust in his eyes from the fireworks in the pregame ceremony.
Smoke.
Yeah.
Very good. We'll continue to update as events warrant. Back to your phones as promised. Dean in the car on the Patriots. He says offensive issues. Go ahead, Dean.
Hey, Felgi, I'm with you 100% on the running back issue thing because I think they're a dime a dozen. However, I think you need to have actually someone that's respected in the backfield. I like White, but he's not a running back. He's a receiver, really. And every time Patterson goes back there, everyone in their stadium knows who's getting the ball, so it's not an actual threat. And if you watch the Buffalo game, the linebackers in the inside where they're playing that Tampa 2, they weren't even respecting the run. They were running right back into coverage right away. So as much as I agree with you, they have to have something back there.
Well, let me tell you something. And we can talk about this because I know you like talking about running backs. Everyone does, apparently. I think it's just a non-issue. When you talk about the issues on the team, their issues offensively, I'm far more concerned about Edelman being totally healthy and having the same amount of burst that he used to have, Gronkowski being healthy and having the same amount of burst that he has, that Gordon continues to progress and give them something, that Hogan gets a little bit better, that the protection stays right. I think those things are – I think all those things are more important than who the – flipping running back is.
See, I generally agree with his point, though. There are good running backs and bad ones.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely true. Again, I just don't think that Patterson qualifies as a good one. And I'm not telling you he's bad. I don't see anything special there in terms of what he does.
Andrew in Medford has a Red Sox thought. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, guys. First off, Maz and Murray, just appreciate the baseball reporters. It was awesome this year. Question about Evaldi. I know that he's had some injuries in the past, and I'm just wondering, everybody says we should re-sign him, but does he have anything left in the tank? Is it possible that we saw him pitch the best he's going to pitch this last postseason? Thanks, guys.
Of course.
Yes, it's entirely possible that he will never be that good again. Yep, 100%, and I would still take a shot. Because I think, again, I think there are multiple ways to use that guy. So, and because he is who he is, the contract's not prohibitive. Let's say you sign him and his career ends. Is 3 years, $40 million going to put you under? You can handle that easily. No problem.
Brandon in Boston on Terry Rozier. Hi.
How you doing? Thanks for taking my phone call. Hopefully I can nail something really quick. So with Terry Rozier, I just want to know your thoughts on this. I'll trade him for Shabazz Napier. The points per game is 7.5, so it's Shabazz. APG's 2.1. The only thing different is the RPG, which is Terry Rozier's 4.4, and Shabazz is 1.3. But they both have the same size. Shabazz is a champion from UConn. I think if he will definitely embrace the city and his role here as far as coming off the bench in the secondary unit.
Okay, Brandon. I'm going to stop you there. Shabazz Napier... Sham Shabbat, Shaz Fenefesi. I don't care who it is.
Shaz
Palminteri. The whole idea here is that you have too many mouths to feed and too many guys who want minutes and shots and this thing. That's the thing we're talking about. I don't want to replace Terry Rozier with another guy who wants the same things, but he has a different name. So I'd rather them see like
Well, he's saying, though, that that Napier would accept that role.
He would. Fine.
That's what he's saying.
Then fine. I'll take him.
Now, I don't know if I believe him. I told you, if they lose Rozier, ultimately he goes to free agency, I'm okay with that. They don't need Rozier to win the championship, but Rozier can help them. If something were to happen in Golden State and one of those guys goes down, the Celtics should win the title this year. They could. So, you know what? I'll take my chances on that one. I'd hold out on Rozier, see what you get, because if something happens to Kyrie, you're going
to
need him.
Anthony in the car has something to say about some of Greg Bedard's commentary on Tom Brady. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, guys, I don't know if you already talked about this directly, but Bedard talked earlier this week on how Brady's not seeing the field right, and he's just not getting the offense. If you look at Belichick's mic'd up comments, where Brady throws that touchdown at Gordon, he goes off the field and says, "Who are you throwing that to?" I think that really exemplifies what Greg's saying. He doesn't even trust that Brady's throwing to the open guy.
Do you get the same thing? We'll play the sound here later on, but do you get the same thing?
Yeah, I think he wondered because they had two guys in the same area, and it's a logical question to ask. Were you throwing to Edelman and you overthrew him, or were you throwing to Gordon?
And the fact that they put that in the thing, though, like, does it, again, I haven't quite
so heard it. So it's a good point.
I haven't heard it myself, but is it clear that Bill's sort of, I don't know, it's not exactly flattering to Brady?
I would say that Bill is unclear. And so, yes. I mean, I would say...
I've heard people say that he asked because he wanted to know who to go congratulate.
No, I don't think that that's it at all. I don't think that that's it at all. Because Gordon scored the touchdown.
Yeah, right. Why would he congratulate?
You go congratulate Gordon.
Right, yeah.
Like, no. I think that, again, when you watch the play over and over again, they were pretty close to one another. And so, now, do I think Brady's telling the truth? I do. I think he was throwing the ball to Gordon. I don't think that he missed Edelman by that much and it ended up going to Gordon. I think the throw was to Gordon. But I think Belichick looked at it and had his doubts.
Well, Brady said that that play usually goes to Edelman. That when they run that, that's Edelman. But he saw that the defense sucked up so badly that Gordon was just as wide open. He decided to go to Gordon. But that's why Edelman was expecting him to put up his hands to catch the ball because that play is supposed to go to Edelman. That's what they did say, and that's probably what Bill was thinking when he asked him. Either way, you know, Greg's point on Brady, and I agree with it, is that he doesn't look – he hasn't been great. His play has fallen off. Greg's point is he doesn't know if that's just Brady in a vacuum or that's all about – you know, whatever. Edelman being out
the whole passing game,
or Gronkowski being hurt, or everybody being out of sync, or the slow start, missing the offseason, the slow camp, et cetera, et cetera. He doesn't know why it looks the way it does, but it looks the way it does. But that it does look the way it looks, which is Brady not quite the same guy. John in Stoughton on AL MVP. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, although I agree that JD Martinez, you know, did help a lot, and of course his bat and everything, I mean, I don't agree that with the take that, you know, Mookie Betts didn't deserve the MVP. I mean, some people, you know, I would even say some of you guys, like, what does Felger and Mass think about Mookie Betts? Fake MVP. You know, I just don't see it that way. I just see it as he was really good.
So I don't think that's our take. I think these guys think that there should be one MVP candidate per team and that it was JD Martinez.
I just think that, again, to me, it's about impact. Okay, it's about impact, and I believe in a lot of the impact that's unseen. And I'm telling you that that whole lineup changed when they put J.D. Martinez in it. Okay, so you can give me all the numbers you want and the war metrics and the fact that Mookie Betts plays a gold glove outfield and J.D. Martinez doesn't and all of that. I'm telling you that that Red Sox lineup this year does not lead the majors in runs scored if J.D. Martinez isn't in it by a long shot. And Mookie didn't hit at all in the postseason and they won the World Series. So, again, now you say, well, what did J.D. do? He had an RBI per game. He had an OPS over 900, and he had 304. So it's not like he sucked. I mean, and I think the way that teams – see, this is sort of like the Boris comment in some ways about, you know, teams will pay for what they deem valuable. I think you can tell how good a hitter is sometimes by the way other teams pitch him and the way they treat him. And they were scared of J.D. Martinez.
Continue with your thoughts on all of the above topics. Plus, I want to introduce one more, and that is the importance of Rob Gronkowski to the offense. Feels like a no-brainer question, right? He's important to the offense. Just how important. I read something this morning. It made me spit out my, you know, organic butter coffee.
And butter coffee.
I wasn't even really drinking it at the time. I was drinking Dunkin' Donuts black coffee.
I spit out my almond milk.
Okay, we'll give you this right after Murray's update here. 90 seconds, no commercials.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.